Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Burnt.
You're Burnt. This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely making our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive in the larger Cosmere. We are currently on Words of Radiance, about to finish up part four. Mango, what happened last time? Do you remember?
The entire thing was just in the cavern. They got in a shouting match, and then a chasm fiend started coming after them, so they ran away. And they managed to get away. And then they started flirting. Well, first, before they started flirting, Kaladin was like, yeah, you're so lucky that you didn't have to go through any sort of suffering and stuff. And Shallan basically described exactly what he was feeling when he felt like there was nothing inside, just, like, terrible. And he was like, oh, so she has suffered. Never mind. And then they started flirting. And then a chasm fiend came after them again, and they hid into, like, a little crevice where it couldn't get to them. But there's a height storm coming that, if they stay down there where they are, they're gonna die. They're gonna get thrown around all the different rocks, and they're gonna die. Kaladin is basically like, here, I'm gonna go out and distract it. I have a better chance because I have fighting experience, and then once I go and distract it, you're gonna run the other way and get out. And he's like, yeah, I might survive. I'll probably survive. Don't worry about me. And then he's literally about to go, and she's like, okay, well, take this. And then gives him the frickin' shard blade. Well, she summons a shard blade. And I was immediately like, what?
There was one little scene that wasn't in the chasm. It was just Teft waiting for Kaladin to come out.
Oh yeah, and Dalinar thinks he's dead.
Yeah, Dalinar's like, what the fuck? Why do you guys think that they survived after falling into a chasm? And they're like, he's gonna make it, you'll see. But Teft also told Sigzil about the cult he was in as a child and how they were putting themselves into deadly situations
so that they could manifest radiant powers.
And obviously that didn't work. And eventually he turned them into the high prince or the local city lord, who then killed them all, had them all executed.
Yep.
This week, chapter 72, Selfish Reasons. It has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I suspect that he is more a force than an individual now, despite your insistence to the contrary. That force is contained and an equilibrium reached.
Did Adolin think they were dead?
We did not see Adolin in this last one. We don't know what he thinks yet.
Okay.
We start in Kaladin's POV, and I'm going to read directly from the book here. Kaladin stared at the glistening length of metal. It glowed softly, the color of garnet, along several faint lines down its length. Shallan had a shard blade. He twisted his head toward her, and in so doing, his cheek brushed the flat of the blade. No screams. He froze, then cautiously raised a finger and touched the cold metal. Nothing happened. The screech he had heard in his mind when fighting alongside Adolin did not recur. It seemed a very bad sign to him. Though he did not know the meaning of that terrible sound, it was related to his bond with Syl. How? He asked. It's not important. I rather think it is. Not at the moment. Look, are you going to take this thing? Holding it this way is awkward. If I drop it by accident and cut off your foot, it's going to be your fault. He hesitated. He saw corpses, friends with burned eyes. He'd refused these weapons each time one was offered to him. But always before, it had been after the fight. This was different. Besides, he wasn't choosing to become a shard bearer. He would only use this weapon to protect someone's life. Making a decision, he reached up and seized the shard blade by the hilt. At least this told him one thing. Shallan wasn't likely to be a surgebinder. Otherwise, he suspected she'd hate this blade as much as he did. Kaladin tells her to run and get back to the war camps, but she says that she has to get her satchel that she dropped first, that she'll need the sketches inside to help Dalinar. And she says, please don't die, all right? He was suddenly aware of her pressed against his back, holding him. I'll do my best, he said. Get ready. She nodded, letting go of him. One, two, three. Kaladin leapt out of into the chasm and dashed toward the chasm fiend. It surged towards him, and he threw himself to the floor to duck underneath it. He got back to his feet and swung the shard blade, but missed. The creature turned around to face him. Kaladin backed down the chasm, leading it away from Shallan. He caught a glimpse of her leaving the crack and scrambling away. He waved the shard blade again, but the creature just watched him. Shallan's blade glowed softly from a strange pattern along its length. Kaladin had never seen one do that before, but then he'd never seen a shard blade in the dark before.
He'd never seen a shard blade wielded by a Radiant before.
Kaladin stepped backward again and stumbled. The chasm fiend struck, and Kaladin threw himself into a roll to dodge. He ended up pressing up against one of the walls and threw himself into another roll to dodge another blow. He managed to slice through the tip of one of the creature's claws. He wasn't so much fighting the chasm fiend as he was just annoying it. It swung at him again, but the confines of the chasm made it difficult. He barely got out of the way, finding it nearly impossible to see in the darkness. The creature pushed him further and further away from the light. He felt so slow and clumsy without Stormlight. Kaladin managed to get underneath the chasm fiend and slammed the shard blade into its underside. It seemed to actually hurt it. It lunged for him, and even though he tried to dodge, its jaw caught his leg. Kaladin swung wildly as pain ran up his leg, possibly hitting the chasm fiend in the face, but he wasn't certain. The world spun. He hit the ground and rolled. The shard blade had vanished. He couldn't feel his leg, but upon inspection, the damage wasn't too bad. The numbness was from shock. He got back to his feet and saw the shard blade lying nearby. He tried to get to it, but his leg gave out. Suddenly, Shallan appears behind him and calls out to the chasm to get the chasm fiend's attention. It turned and began to smash at her. He scrambled to the shard blade, but collapsed again once he had it. The monster was still swiping about, but Kaladin couldn't see Shallan anywhere. Stabbing the beast in the chest had only made it angrier. He had to get to the head. He stumbled to his feet, and the creature surged towards him. Kaladin fell again, trying to get down to one knee, but ending up completely on his side. In front of him, one of the spheres he tossed shone with a bright white light. He reached into the water, snatching it. He needed that light. Storms. His life depended on it. Please. The chasm fiend loomed above. Kaladin sucked in a breath, straining, like a man gasping for air. He heard, as if distantly, weeping. No power entered him. The chasm fiend swung, and Kaladin twisted, and strangely found himself. The other version of him... The chasm fiend swung, and Kaladin twisted, and strangely found himself. The other version of him stood above him, sword raised, larger than life. It was bigger than him by half. What in the Almighty's own eyes? Kaladin thought, dumbfounded, as the chasm fiend smashed an arm down into the figure beside Kaladin. The not him shattered into a puff of stormlight. What had he done? How had he done it? No matter. He lived. With a cry of desperation, he threw himself back to his feet and lurched toward the chasm fiend. The chasm fiend reared, then snapped down for a bite. Kaladin thrust upward. So yeah, in case it wasn't clear, the Shallan he saw was an illusion that she made, and she
I know. Well, it wasn't Shallan, it was him.
But also earlier, he saw her and the chasm fiend turned and charged after her, and then she disappeared. That was also an illusion of her. We cut to Shallan's POV. Shallan sees the beast fall on top of Kaladin and notices some spren around the chasm fiend seeming to leave it. Kaladin's body protrudes from the creature's mouth and she tries to pull him out. They banter as she uses her blade to try to cut him free, and he explains that he stabbed the chasm fiend in the brain to kill it. Once free, Cal asks her to bind his leg for him, which she does. They take a brief rest and despair that the storm will get them anyway. Kaladin then realizes that Shallan could use the shard blade to cut out a cubbyhole above the waterline in the chasm for them to hide in from the storm. She climbs up the dead chasm fiend and reaches the top of the waterline. She summoned the blade again, but the thing was just so blasted long. Obligingly, it shrank in her hand to the size of a much shorter sword, really a big knife. Thank you, she thought. She carves handholds in the chasm to climb above the waterline to carve a shelter out for them. They banter as Shallan cuts the rock, and it takes about an hour for her to finish. She uses a vine to help Kaladin climb up to the safe spot just before the floods reach them. And that is the end of the chapter.
Wait, so you can change the shape of a shard blade?
Apparently. Chapter 73, A Thousand Scurrying Creatures. And this has Shallan's flashback symbol, and it reads 1 year ago.
The last one.
Shallan and Jushu are in Balat's room helping him prepare to leave. They talk about the valuable deposits of stone recently found on their land, and how they find it strange to be wealthy all of a sudden. Despite the family's wealth, their father's mood has continued to grow darker. Shallan unfolds and reads a letter. Their contacts haven't been able to find Helleran, who seems to have disappeared. Balat is jumpy, worried that their father will discover that he intends to leave. His plan is to escape with Aelita, and if he can't find Helleran, they'll go to High Prince Valaam in Redden, who years ago told them he'd listen to anyone willing to testify against their father. Jushu is skeptical, saying that their father is in favor now and that the High Prince is nearly dead. Wickham slams the door open, telling them that Aelita is in the feast hall and that their father had summoned her. Balat and Wickham rush to find out what is happening. Shallan follows slowly, overwhelmed with panic, but she feels pulled forward. Somehow she knows that this has been coming, that it was inevitable. She collects the pouch of Blackbane that Wickham had given her years ago and heads downstairs. Balat is arguing with their father about Aelita. Lin reveals that he knows about their plan to leave. Shallan enters the room and walks along the walls toward the kitchens. She notices something on the floor, blocking the kitchen doors from closing. Lin tells them that Helleran is dead. He died on a battlefield in Alethkar. Shallan reaches the bundle on the floor and realizes that it's a body. It is Melisse, which is her stepmom. She'd been killed by several blows to the head. Shallan concludes that he'd discovered the plan, sent for Aelita, and waited for her to arrive, and then killed his wife. It was a calculated punishment, not committed in a moment of passion. She moves to where servants had left a pitcher of wine with cups. Balat unsheathes his sword, followed by Lin. They clash brutally, and Lin is able to swat Balat's sword out of his hand. Lin tells them that he's always despised Balat, and of his sons, only Helleran wasn't worthless. Shallan hands him a cup of wine, which he gulps down. Balat grabs his sword and tries to stab their father, but hits something metallic through his coat, which stops the blade. Lin tosses his sword aside and gets an iron poker from the fireplace. He slams it into Balat's leg over and over, berating him about being useless. Lin's hands start shaking and the poker slips to the ground. Lin is surprised and he stumbles and falls to his knees, then to his side. Shallan, feeling cold, tells Aelita to bind Balat's wounds, then kneels next to her father. Lin is motionless, staring at the ceiling. After her brother's initial confusion, Shallan tells them that she poisoned their father by placing the Blackbane in his wine. Jushu pulls a soulcaster out of Lin's pocket, which had apparently been broken while blocking Balat's last strike. That's how the soulcaster got broken. Just then, their father starts twitching and his eyes focus on Shallan. She realizes that the poison has only paralyzed him. "We need to finish the job then," Shallan said. "I'm sorry," she whispered, unhooking her necklace. "Thank you for what you did for me." She wrapped the necklace around his neck. Then she began to twist. "Now go to sleep," she whispered, "in chasms deep, with darkness all around you." A lullaby. Shallan spoke the song through her tears. The song he'd sung for her as a child when she was frightened. Red blood speckled his face and covered her hands. The rock and dread may be your bed, so sleep, my baby dear. She felt his eyes on her. Her skin squirmed as she held the necklace tight. "Now comes the storm," she whispered, "but you'll be warm. The wind will rock your basket." Shallan had to watch as his eyes bulged out, his face turning colors. His body trembling, straining, trying to move. The eyes looked to her, demanding, betrayed. "The crystal's fine, will glow sublime. Father, stop moving. And with a song, you'll sleep, my baby dear." And that's the end of the chapter. I sent you that lullaby way at the beginning of the book because his father sings it to her in her first flashback chapter. I listened to that song a million times while reading Way of Kings before I got to this book. And so when I got to the end of this book and I realized that the song I'd been listening to was used in this context, I was like, oh, okay.
Fun.
That fucked me up a little bit. Chapter 74, Striding the Storm. This has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "You, however, have never been a force for equilibrium. You tow chaos behind you like a corpse dragged by one leg through the snow. Please, hearken to my plea. Leave that place and join me in my oath of non-intervention." We're in Kaladin's POV. Kaladin reaches the sheltered alcove just before the floodwaters arrive. He and Shallan huddle together against the rock as the waters quickly rise. Kaladin tells Shallan how he was left to die in a high storm by Sadeas. Cal looks up and thinks he sees a giant floating figure followed by another figure walking in the storm. Sorry, not a floating figure, a glowing figure. Yeah, he sees stuff walking in the storm.
He's probably right.
Yeah. Shallan asks Cal to tell his story as a means of taking her mind off the high storm, and he starts from when he was made a slave by Amaram and speaks of his slavery in Tevlakiv, his time with Bridge Four, and the rescue of Dalinar in fighting the Parshendi Shardbearer. He hears chanting and sees strange Spren flying around. After he finishes his story, Shallan says she killed her father, and tells about how her mother died, and what her life was like when she was a child. And Kaladin is in awe of her ability to be bright despite how broken she is. The book says that she tells about how her mother died, but does not describe how her mother died. He realizes that her brother was the Shardbearer he killed when he saved Amaram, but doesn't reveal that fact to her. She tells of her plan to steal the Soulcaster from Yasna and instead becoming her ward and Adolin's betrothed. She vanishes, and Kaladin realizes that he is having a vision. He looked out and met the gaze of a face as wide as eternity itself. Stormfather, Kaladin said. Some named him Yzerizay, Herald. This didn't fit with what Kaladin had heard of any Herald. However, was the Stormfather a Spren, perhaps? A god? It seemed to stretch forever, yet he could see it, make out the face in its infinite expanse. The winds had stopped. Kaladin could hear his own heartbeat. Child of honor. She's one of them, isn't she? He asked. Of the Knights Radiant, or at least a Surgebinder. That's what happened when fighting the Chasm Fiend. That's how she survived the fall. It wasn't me either time. It was her. The Stormfather rumbled. Syl, Kaladin said. The plateaus in front of him had vanished. It was just him in the face. He had to ask. It hurt him, but he had to. What have I done to her? You have killed her. The voice shook everything. No, Kaladin whispered. No. It happened as it once did, the Stormfather said, angry. Men cannot be trusted, child of Tanavast. You have taken her from me, my beloved one. The face seemed to withdraw, fading. Please, Kaladin screamed. How can I fix it? What can I do? It cannot be fixed. She is broken. You are like the ones who came before, the ones who killed so many of those I love. Farewell, son of honor. You will not ride my winds again. No, The storm returned. Kaladin collapsed back into the alcove. Shallan exclaims and says that she also saw the face of the vision, which Cal identifies as the Stormfather. After the storm subsides, they fall asleep. And that is where the chapter ends.
Syl.
And I have an image for you.
That seems so sudden. We only got one thing of Syl being like, I'm kind of turning back to, like, a brainless Spren. And then all of a sudden she's gone. Like, what? He didn't do anything that he didn't do before.
I mean, he didn't fix the problem either.
Yeah, but sometimes problems being fixed needs to take time.
Apparently he didn't have time.
That doesn't make sense. Sorry, Brandon, that doesn't make sense. It's so sudden, it feels like it should have been led up to more.
The image I sent you is of, well, that's what a Chasm Fiend looks like. And the Spren that she saw around, the writing says, are these the same Spren as those I saw with the Sky Eels in Carbranth? What is the connection?
Are Chasm Fiend Spren?
No. I can tell you what's happening because it's not a big deal. The Spren are making it lighter. They have a connection with the Chasm Fiend, kind of similar to like the Nahel Bond that the Radiants have, but not exactly. But it allows them to grow so massive and not crush themselves. The same thing is happening with Sky Eels, and that's what allows them to fly.
Huh. So the Chasm Fiends are able to just bond with Spren?
In a way, not intelligent Spren as the Radiants are, but lesser Spren like these. There's something similar happening with Raishadium. That's why they're so special. They are also forming bonds with Spren.
Oh, that's interesting.
Chapter 75, True Glory. It has Dalinar's symbol. The epigraph reads, the Cosmere itself may depend upon our restraint. It's in Dalinar's POV, and it starts, Amram is imploring Dalinar to speak with Sadeas and make peace with him before they begin their expedition. Dalinar looks at Navani but doesn't reply. They hear horns, which announce the sighting of a chrysalis and its location, and Dalinar says that they aren't going to go after it. Amram says that Sadeas will go after it on his own and that his disobedience is causing the rifts in the kingdom to grow worse. Amram says the Voidbringers are coming and they need to be united, but Dalinar says the time and opportunity to work with Sadeas has long passed. Amram tries to dissuade Dalinar from his expedition and says that even Dalinar won't listen to him anymore. Dalinar replies that he has to go out to seek the answers. Dalinar asks about Amram's investigation into the madman, and Amram says the madman was deluded about having a shard blade. I'm going to read from the book. Bright Lord, a breathless young woman in a messenger uniform scrambled up to him. The plateau. Yes, Dalinar said. Sadeas is sending out troops. No, sir, the woman said. He came out of the chasms. Dalinar frowned, looking sharply toward her. Who? Stormblessed. Dalinar ran the entire way. When he drew close to the triage pavilion, he had trouble seeing because of the crowd of men. A surgeon was yelling for them to back up and give him room. Some of the men saw Dalinar and saluted, hastily pulling out of the way. And there he was, ragged, face scratched, and leg wrapped. He sat on a triage table and had removed his uniform coat. Kaladin looked up as Dalinar approached and then moved to pull himself to his feet. Soldier, don't, Dalinar began, but Kaladin didn't listen. He hauled himself up tall. Then he raised hand to breast. It was, Dalinar figured, the most tired salute he'd ever seen. "Sir," Kaladin said. "How?" Dalinar said. "You fell into a chasm." "I fell face first, sir. Unfortunately, I'm particularly hard-headed." "But..." Kaladin sighed. "I'm sorry, sir. I don't really know how I survived. Some Spren were involved, we think. Anyway, I hiked back through the chasms. I had a duty to see to." He nodded to the side. Farther into the triage tent, Dalinar saw something he hadn't originally noticed. Shallan D'Var sat amid a pack of surgeons. One future daughter-in-law delivered safe and sound. Sorry about the damage done to the packaging. "But there was a high storm. We really wanted to get back before that. Ran into some troubles along the way, I'm afraid. You know how everyone kept saying there was a chasm fiend prowling about in the nearby chasms?" "Yes." Kaladin pulled out at the gem heart. "Yeah, we took care of that for you, sir." Dalinar stared mutely at the gem heart. "Oh, don't be so melodramatic, Bridgman," Shallan called. "Brightlord Dalinar, we found the beast already dead and rotting in the chasm. We survived the high storm by climbing up its back to a crack in the side of the plateau where we waited out the rains. We could only get the gem heart out because the thing was half-rotted already." Kaladin looked to her, frowning. He turned back to Dalinar almost immediately. "Yes, that's what happened." He was a far worse liar than Shallan was. Amaram and Navani finally arrived. Navani gasped when she saw Shallan, then ran to her, snapping angrily at the surgeons. She fussed and bustled around Shallan, who seemed far less the worse for wear than Kaladin. In moments, Navani had Shallan wrapped in a blanket to cover her exposed skin, then she sent a runner back to prepare a warm bath and meal at Dalinar's complex. Dalinar found himself smiling. Navani pointedly ignored Shallan's protest that none of this was necessary. The Mother Axe Hound had finally emerged. "Sir," Kaladin said, "the soldiers are gathering supplies. The battalion's forming up. Your expedition?" "You needn't worry, soldier. I could hardly expect you to guard me in your state." "Sir, Brightness Shallan found something out there, something you need to know. Talk to her before you set out." "I'll do so." He waited for a moment, then waved the surgeons aside. Dalinar stepped closer, leaning in. "Your men waited for you, Stormblessed. They skipped meals, pulled triple shifts. I half think they'd have sat out there at the head of the chasms through the high storm itself if I hadn't intervened." "They're good men," Kaladin said. "It's more than that. They knew you would return. What is it they understand about you that I don't?" Kaladin met his eyes. "I've been searching for you, haven't I? All this time without seeing it." Kaladin looked away. "No, sir. Maybe once, but I'm just what you see and not what you think. I'm sorry." Dalinar grunted, inspecting Kaladin's face. He had almost thought, but perhaps not. "Give him anything he wants or needs," Dalinar said. "This man is a hero, again." He withdrew, letting the Bridgemen crowd around. Where had Amaram gone? The man had been here just a few moments ago. As the palanquin arrived for Shallan, Dalinar decided to follow and find out just what it was that Kaladin said the girl knew. And we cut to Shallan's POV. Shallan rests in bed, accepting of Navani's unexpected affection. Pattern repeats a conversation that he was sent to spy on between Dalinar and Navani. Notably, Dalinar wants Shallan to go on the expedition, but Navani tries to protect Shallan by having her stay behind. Shallan tells Pattern she has to go. "Pattern," she said, "I'm not a Radiant, right?" "I do not think so," he said. "Not yet. There is more to do, I believe, though I cannot be certain. How can you not know?" "I was not me when the Knights Radiant existed. It is complex to explain. I have always existed. We are not born as men are, and we cannot truly die as men do. Patterns are eternal, as is fire, as is the wind, as are all Spren. Yet I was not in this state. I was not..."
"The wind is eternal, huh?"
"I was not aware. You were a mindless Spren, like the ones that gather around me when I draw? Less than that. I was everything. In everything. I cannot explain it. Language is insufficient. I would need numbers. Surely there are others among you, though. Older cryptics who were alive back then?" "No," Pattern said softly. "None who experienced the bond. Not a single one? All dead. To us, this means they are mindless, as a force cannot truly be destroyed. These old ones are patterns in nature now, like cryptics unborn. We have tried to restore them. It does not work. Perhaps if their knights still lived, something could be done. An entire people? All killed? Not just one people. Many. Spren with minds were less plentiful then, and the majorities of several Spren peoples were all bonded. There were very few survivors. The one you call Stormfather lived. Some others, the rest, thousands of us, were killed when the event happened. You call it the Recreants. No wonder you're certain I will kill you. It is inevitable. You will eventually betray your oaths, breaking my mind, leaving me dead. But the opportunity is worth the cost. My mind is too static. We always change, yes, but we change in the same way, over and over. It is difficult to explain. You, though, you are vibrant. Coming to this place, this world of yours, I had to give up many things. The transition was traumatic. My memory returned slowly, but I am pleased at the chance. Yes, Only a radiant can open the pathway, but we don't know why or how. Maybe I'll count as enough of a radiant to make it work? Perhaps. Or you could progress, become more. There is something more you must do. Words, Shallan said. You have said the words. You said them long ago. No, it is not words that you lack. It is truth. You prefer lies. Yes, and you are a lie. A powerful one. However, what you do is not just lie. It is truth and lie mixed. You must understand both. Adolin appears and embraces her in a hug and kiss. He says that he was visiting all the High Princes, delivering an ultimatum to join Dalinar, or be labeled as someone who refused to fulfill the Vengeance Pact. Shallan says she saw a dead chasm fiend that she wants to draw for him. Adolin apologizes for rescuing his father instead of her. I will make sure that you aren't ever hurt, Adolin said fiercely. I should have realized that you could be hurt caught in an assassination attempt intended for father. We'll have to make it so that you aren't ever in that kind of position again. She pulled away from him. Shallan, don't worry, they won't get to you. I'll protect you. Don't say things like that, she hissed. What? Just don't. The man who did this, who threw that lever, is dead now. Is that what you're worried about? He was poisoned before we could get answers, though we're sure he belonged to Sadeus. But you don't need to worry about him. I will worry about what I wish to worry about, Shallan said. I don't need to be protected. But I don't. I won't be locked away again, Adolin. Again? It's not important. I appreciate the concern. That's all that matters. But I won't let you or anyone else treat me like a thing to be hidden away. Never, ever again. Dalinar and Navani enter, and Dalinar has a request. But Shallan anticipates him and requests to go on the expedition despite the dangers, since she thinks the ancient city that Yasna was searching for is there. Dalinar asks her to expand on their map of the Shattered Plains, and she says she will do so. Shallan also requests that they leave the parchment behind, since Yasna felt they were dangerous. Then it shall be done, Dalinar said. Gather your things and send word to your uncle's Sabariel, Brightness. We're leaving within the hour, without parchment. The end of part 4.
That's it?
That's it. Then we're done for the episode.
Feels anticlimactic.
Yeah, but they're setting off. They're about to go to war, essentially, is where the part ends.
Yeah.
They're about to go to... And, like, we're going to do a very long Taravangian interlude and two other very short interludes that we could literally do right now, and it'd probably take us, like, 3 minutes.
But is the Taravangian one first?
No.
Okay, well, then let's do those two.
Okay, then we'll start. Point of views are Lon, Eshonai, and Taravangian. Interlude 12 is Lon. This is my least favorite interlude in the whole series. It's told from the point of view of an ardent in Kolinar, but, like, the character is not important at all. And what's really important, like, I'm really not even going to go into detail about this interlude that much. Like, what's important is that the queen and all of the ardents in Kolinar are indulging themselves with feasts and luxuries while the rest of the city goes hungry. The ardents are essentially just the queen's yes men and aren't doing their job. A new ardent comes in, finds it all really shitty, and publicly denounces the queen and gets executed. The citizens of Kolinar riot in response. The general important thing, like, from this interlude is that something very weird is happening in Kolinar and people are acting oddly.
Huh.
And, like, they very... It, just the way it's written, like, you barely get that out of it. It's just...
Do we know anyone from Kolinar?
I mean, that's the capital of Alethkar.
Oh.
So the queen is Elokar's wife, who has been left behind to run the nation. And she is apparently just, like, executing people and, like, throwing parties with the ardents and not doing her
job.
And
they don't know any of this.
They don't know any of this back on the Shattered Plains.
Okay.
Really, the point of this is, like, kind of to open the world up a little bit more because book 3 opens it up a ton.
Okay.
Interlude 13 is titled A Part to Play, and it has Eshonai's symbol. Eshonai tries to ignore a voice that screams deep within her. Benly and Eshonai discuss the upcoming Alethi attack on Narok. Eshonai is saying that they should wait until the Alethi are right on top of them before they summon an unexpected high storm. Benly says that the storm will blow the wrong way, or rather that all high storms so far have blown the wrong way, and that this one will blow the right way. Eshonai isn't happy with how comfortable Benly and her scholars are with the new storm form and how knowledgeable they seem. And that is, like, the end of the interlude.
Okay.
And so next time we're going to cover this Taravangian interlude. That's going to be pretty much the entire episode. And then after that, Dalinar marches to war. But that's it. I hope you are excited as we get close to the ending, because it's pretty insane. It's not as insane as book 3's ending, but it's definitely more insane than the ending of book 1. You guys can remember, follow me on Twitter. That's at Sean_AFK. We have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description. You guys can also follow us on Twitter at Speak Stormlight. Our cover art was made by our good friend Alex. That's at ALX_BEEGBOI, at ALX_BigBoy. And the link to go to his Twitter account will also be in the episode description. Thanks, guys, so much. Again, I think you said the oath last time, so... Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.